Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on rationing when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. And these programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing. Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. Now, the income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. This income tax requires of us that we rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. The income tax requires of us that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verse 35 and 36. The income tax requires of us that we sign contracts with these foreign and alien gods in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. And Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. And Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed. And then we're taught to call that income redistribution. The scripture calls it just what it is: covetousness and theft, in violation of Exodus 20, verse 17. Now, you know, our God, the God of Israel, gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way, which is why I contend that you and I ought to learn how to practice a better way of life than income tax and Social Security. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, it's free. Our school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about rationing. Last time we were talking about rationing of medical services. Well, during the last war, we got a pretty good feel for what this thing of rationing was all about. There were about 200 things that were rationed. You go into a Walmart store today, and they have more than 10,000 products in the store. 10,000 products. Now, during World War II, during the Great Depression, almost everything that we bought here in America was manufactured here in America. There were some imported goods, but they were rare. Today, imported goods are the rule, and made in America is an exception. And here's the kicker. If it's imported, it will be rationed. So during the last round of rationing, if it was being imported, what were the things that were being imported? Well, things like sugar, coffee, meat, fish, butter, eggs, cheese, shoes, rubber, and gasoline. Now, let's think about that one for a minute. Not all of those are imported. Eggs were produced here locally. Cheese, butter, meat, milk, those were all produced here in the United States, and yet they were being rationed because they were in short supply. Now, the things that were brought in from overseas, things like shellac, for instance, which is an ingredient that came from India used in the building products and music record business, and coffee, rubber, gasoline, silk. These are things that came in from overseas, and they were rationed because shipping was at a premium. And the Germans were out, and the Japanese were out busy sinking ships. And so, you know, here comes a load of coffee from Brazil. It gets torpedoed off the coast of New Jersey, and so you people in New York City don't have coffee. So they had to ration what was left or what was coming in. And, of course, there's the big demand during wartime for all of your allies. Not that we needed it to supply ourselves and our soldiers, but because the British couldn't supply the food needs for their soldiers and their people. So we Americans were providing the food for the British and the food for the Russians and food for the Indians and India and so on around the world. You know, we Americans were producing food and we were shipping it around the world, and we were called the arsenal of democracy. We were producing the guns and all the equipment for the Allies to fight with. All right, now that being the case, whether there's war or not, whether it's a pandemic like SARS or some natural disasters, you know, like that cyclone that just hit Burma, things like that. Now, a cyclone is a regional event. A Hurricane Katrina is a regional event. But when we get a worldwide pandemic going, and there's evidently reason to believe that they're going to succeed in doing that, AIDS was a biologic weapon that was created by the English or the British, MI6, I believe it was, in Sierra Leone. And that's quite a little story of them by itself, but that AIDS thing now has been unleashed on the world, and they've got other diseases that they've unleashed or are about to unleash, and the objective is to reduce the Earth's population by 90%. I always have to wonder, you know, if these people got this thing under control, or is it going to go out of control? Matthew 24 tends to indicate to me that it's going to get out of control. I think that their intent is to target populations and reduce them, but I'm afraid that once the genie gets out of the jar, you may not be able to control that. And that's what prompted our God to tell us that, except that he intervenes at a critical moment in history, there would no flesh be saved alive here on planet Earth. And that sends me a pretty vibrant signal. It says, oh, I'm not sure that George Bush and the United Nations and the New World Order and the Illuminati have all their ducks in a row. I mean, they probably think they do, but I'm not sure that they do. And in this transition now, we're talking about, well, what is it that's going to be rationed and what is it that we ought to be stockpiling up on? Well, shoes is number one on the list. If you don't want to go barefoot, then you should have at least a 4-year supply of shoes. Now, I figured out that it takes me about 2 years to wear out a pair of Red Wing high-top work shoes. 2 years. So for 4 years, I need two pairs of shoes that I've got up here on the shelf someplace. Well, my wife wears shoes, and her feet aren't as big as mine, and so she's got to have two pairs of shoes. Now, we've got shoes in the closet. I mean, all of us do, I'm pretty sure, but then how about friends and neighbors and relatives? So the other day I got to thinking about that shoe problem. It was a problem in World War II. I can remember that. It was a rationed item. You had to have your cards and so on. I'm not going to have my cards. I'm not going to have my national ID. And so as a result of that, then I'm not going to be able to go get my share, which is good for all of you people out there, because now, before there's any shortages, I went out into the marketplace and I bought my shoes. So when the shortages develop, I will not be standing in line trying to share in the shortage. I will be using my own personal abundance. And after all, that's what the Ten Commandment model is all about. Remember, the Ten Commandment model is individual responsibility. So since I can see that there is a shoe shortage coming up, let me explain why. When I was a kid, all of our shoes were made here in America. we had vibrant shoe-making industries here in America. We made shoes here. Today, 99% of our shoes come from overseas. So you can just about say that we have abolished our shoe-making industry in America, and we've offshored it and outsourced it to some foreign country. Now, we have to buy those shoes, which means we have to work, make the trading capital, and then trade it. We're not doing that, and we're importing five times more than we're exporting. So that tells me that when they shut us off, there's going to be a shoe shortage. Okay, now that's called vision. So you look ahead and you say, Now, of course, if you're in the Mr. Rogers Sesame Street and Barney mode, you've never heard of such a thing. And Sesame Street doesn't talk about international balance of trade. And so it never comes to the consciousness of the average Joe Sixpack American, especially the young ones. So looking at that problem, I say to myself, there's coming a shoe shortage, and I need to have some shoes, and shoes are imported. And it's going to be a rationed item, so therefore I better have mine up front and in advance, because I'm not going to be able to get my share. I won't have my national ID card and my ration card. Now, for most of you who have your ration cards, well, you can stand in line and share the shortage. In my case, I won't stand in line and I won't share anybody else's shortage. I'll just have my own. Then I have to prepare for that up front. So let me just throw that one out there for your consideration. Now, cocoa, that's chocolate, comes from overseas. Now, I know that a lot of people say, well, I can live without chocolate. Oh, well, wait a minute now. Hang on a second. Son, you can live without shoes. Mankind has lived longer on this planet barefoot than he has with shoes. Shoes are a common phenomenon that we've only known in the world over the past 200 years. Most people in the world were barefoot until the last 200 years. Now, it's true, people wore sandals in various cultures and societies, but hey, let me tell you, those are the people that are in the advanced part of the planet. The average Joe Sixpack, you know, down in the Amazon jungle, you know, running around shooting monkeys with his bow and arrow and his blowgun, he's barefoot. So, let's wake up to reality over here. Everything that we use, whether it's electricity or shoes or coffee or cocoa or whatever it is, adds to what we call a standard of living. My standard of living includes electricity. My standard of living includes shoes, cocoa, coffee, you know, along with meat, milk, butter, and eggs. Now, in order for me to maintain that standard of living, and if we're going into a rationing mode, then I say to myself, well, I'm not going to get as much chocolate or as much coffee as I would like to have. Now, how much coffee do you think that you want to drink? Now, I've mentioned my coffee story a time or two in the past. Let me bore you to tears, and I'll mention it to you again. Out in the in the real world, we have this thing called hoarding, and people that hoard, you know, are like racists. You know, they're like homophobics. They're just wicked, evil, terrible, awful people. So I try to point out to people that the world's first homophobic is God Almighty Himself, who prohibited sodomy. That wasn't something that I thought of. The law against sodomy was thought up by God Almighty Himself. He was the world's first homophobic. I'm just a follower. Nothing original about me. So, as a result of that, I take a look at it and I say, well, how would God handle that? What's God's modality? Well, God has a modality of abundance. In fact, there's a section in the Bible that says, brethren, I wish above all things that you might have great abundance. Abundance is wealth. Abundance is 24 cent a gallon gas. When you got so damn much of the stuff, you got to get rid of it somehow. The tanks are full of it, so we'll lower the price to 24 cents a gallon. See if we can't get all the kids to burn up more 25 cent gas running up and down the streets and over to Mel's Diner and so on. So when I was a kid, my dad had a 57 Chevy. It was a 57 Chevy. Got 8 miles to the gallon. Hell, your Hummer or Humvee gets more than that, doesn't it? I heard they got 11. Yeah, my dad had 57 Chevy. I mean, that thing, when you stepped on the gas, it just smoke come out of the back. It just had more power than brains. And, of course, you know, as a kid, you know, we had a lot of tires to burn up, and so I burned them up. We had a lot of gas to burn, so I went out and burned it up. Now, that was when we had great abundance. That was before peak oil, you know. So, after World War II, you know, we got into this production mode, and we produced great abundance. And then we got off into communism. Now, communism got started in this country with Franklin Roosevelt in 1933, but we took off after communism with a vengeance after World War II. Now we have accomplished the goal. We now are total communists here in the United States. And now we have shortages like all the communist countries have. So we've traded that abundance. All right, now, that being the case, then for those of us that want to practice the bottom-up model, then we have to do something different. So here I am, the only non-communist in my local community over here, and so as it relates to coffee, coffee was selling for around $5 a can. And so I bought 200 cans. Now let me show you what happened to the world coffee, the world's coffee market as a result of that. $5 times 200 cans is $1,000. Now normal people would take that $1,000 and put it in John Harlan's bank, where they're going to draw about 2 or 3% interest while inflation rages at around 15%. That's modern economics. That's the kind of economics we learn in Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers and Barney. It doesn't have any connection with reality. It doesn't have any connection with business. It's just a bunch of fools that can't count, go to public school, and they've got a big smile on their face, and they watch Katie Couric at night. All right, now that being the case, then I went out and I took my $1,000 and I put it into coffee and I put it up here on the shelf. You know, stick it up in the attic, somewhere out of sight and out of mind. Let me ask you a question here, boys and girls. Have you suffered a coffee shortage as a result of that? Have any of you coffee people out there gone into the restaurant and been turned down, told you to drink water or orange juice because they didn't have any coffee? You went into the supermarket and you went down the coffee aisle and all the shelves were bare, no coffee. All right, if that was the case, then George Gordon is the cause of your problem. I'm a dirty, rotten, low-down hoarder, hoarded up more than my share of coffee. Now, I contend that I went out into the marketplace and I spent my money on something that I wanted. Now, you spent your money on a Carnival cruise, or you spent your money at Disneyland, or you spent your money buying a new car, or doing whatever you did. Were you a hoarder when you did that? I spent my money on coffee. All right. As a result of that, I carry an inventory of coffee because my wife is on the Gerson therapy. And she has to have coffee. You know, it's like a person that's on insulin. See, my wife has to have that coffee enema every day because she's on the Gerson therapy. And she has to have that coffee just like you diabetics have to have your insulin. All right. So I took a look at that and I said, at any time, that coffee could be shut off, just like my Aunt Bessie's oxygen I mentioned to you last time. I said, wait a minute. I got to think about my own family. I got to take care of my own. And I did. So I stored up that coffee. I got a lifetime supply of coffee. Hell, I don't even drink the stuff. But I didn't cause any coffee shortage. And I didn't come out here and hoard this coffee for the express and malign purpose of profiteering. See, I'm not selling the coffee. I put it on the shelf. I got to have it, just like you got to have insulin. All right. Now, that being the case, I got to thinking about that because some time went by and then there was a coffee shortage and the price spiked about $8 a can. And, of course, I just quit buying coffee at $8 a can, waiting until it come back down to $5, and it did. And prices go up and prices come down. Now, here's what the bottom line is. What if everybody in America had done the same thing? Let's just think about this. What if you had 200 cans of coffee on your shelf? And you go over to your neighbor Bob, and he's got 200 cans of coffee on his shelf. And we go up and down the block and around the cul-de-sac, and everybody, all the neighbors, everybody in your city, everybody's got a 200-can supply. And assuming that you're using a can a month, which is about what we use here, about a can a month. Actually, it's a can every 3 weeks, so Let's divide, let's take 52 and divide that by 3, which gives us 17 cans a year. Now let's take 200 cans and divide that by 17, and then I've got an 11.76 year supply of coffee. About a 12-year supply of coffee in round numbers. Now, when you mention that to somebody, they look at you like, my God, you know, maybe you need to be locked up for medical or mental observation for a while. But realizing that coffee comes in from overseas and that it was rationed in World War II and that we're buying everything from overseas and paying for it on credit and that we're bankrupt and we don't have the money to pay and we're not going to pay all of you people. And so Juan Valdez or Valdez, you know, picking coffee down in Colombia, if you think you're going to get paid by us, you know, you got another guest coming. We're going to stiff you. So I'm sitting here saying, well, you know, while coffee is available and while coffee is plentiful, maybe all of us better stock up on coffee because that's what adds to your standard of living. I mean, you either got it or you don't. Now, there's another factor that comes into mind here during rationing. Let's suppose that you're not a coffee drinker. Maybe you're a Seventh-day Adventist, you know, or maybe you're a Mormon. Has it ever occurred to you people to stockpile the coffee for trading capital? I mean, you know, you might trade that coffee to a doctor for insulin. Do you ever stop and think about that? I mean, you can rest assured that your doctor is not going to be stockpiling any coffee. He knows that he's a privileged fellow and he's going to get an X-ration card for gasoline. Maybe he's going to get an X-ration card for coffee too. See, I don't know that. But there's going to be people out there in the black market. Black, remember that black market? That's the free economy. And if you Mormons were to store up 200 cans of coffee right now, you'd have some coffee to trade for gasoline, wouldn't you? You'd have coffee to trade for insulin. You'd have coffee to trade for other things. And that's one of the key survival strategies of rationing. I mentioned that to you a couple programs back, but people would go out and they would sign up for their ration of cigarettes. Then they would take their ration of cigarettes and trade it to somebody to get coffee. There was this great black market going around trading, underground trading, that was going on. See, you'd go down to the store and you'd get your share. Has anybody ever thought that before the rationing comes into play, that you go down and you get your share, you know, long before you have to become a hoarder or a black marketeer? You just put it on the shelf because that's what you're going to use over the next, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. Now, I use the number 4, and I don't know where most of these people are getting their numbers, but I hear FEMA says 3 days. Well, boys and girls, if I went without coffee for 3 days, that would be an inconvenience, but it certainly isn't a life-threatening problem. 3 weeks, 3 months, or 3 years now, that starts to resonate. So my number is 4 years, and it comes from Bible prophecy, is 3.5 years, 1,260 days in the Great Tribulation. I allowed myself 3 months going in, 3 months going out. That's 4 years. And then I said, I better have the means of production at the same time, because this thing might drag on for 7 years. Seven is the number we get from Joseph and the famine in Egypt. Now, not having direct communications with God and God not coming down talking to me personally, live and direct, and telling me it's 7 versus 4 or 4 versus 7, I don't know. So I'm kind of winging it. So what I'm thinking is that I'd like to have a 4-year supply of coffee. Then I'd like to have a little coffee for trade. I might want to go down to Jimmy Wallace or Don Uchman or somebody and say, Don, now you've got your X-rated card. So you got your X card. And I'm going to need gasoline, you know, not for my motorhome, but I need gasoline for chainsaws, rototillers, lawnmowers. So maybe I could trade coffee to Don Uchman, and maybe he, with his farmer's ration card, gets all the gasoline he wants, and I could be burning that colored gas here in my chainsaws and stuff. See? So that's kind of what was in the back of my mind. I'm just betting that Don and Everett and Dale, my neighbors, you know, I don't think those people are going to stock 200 cans of coffee. Because if they did, they would be independent. And I'm really hoping that these guys are dependent. And I want them to be dependent upon me. Because remember, as a bottom feeder without a ration card, without a national ID card, you know, I'm going to be SOL. And a lot of you people out there are going to be SOL. I mean, if you want to avoid the mark of the beast, you know, you should start thinking about that up front right now. Now, your standard of living is going to be dependent upon electricity. Now, you know, we could probably live without electricity. Mankind lived longer on this planet without electricity than he has with it. But I got to tell you that electricity is kind of handy. You know, when I come into the room and I flip a switch, you know, that's a lot easier than striking a match and looking for the lantern. So I kind of prefer the electricity, but listen, when the price of electricity, and remember this carbon tax I mentioned to you the other day, they're going to put a dollar a gallon carbon tax on gasoline. Now, they're not going to call it that, and they're not going to label it like that. Because, see, the Mr. Rogers, Sesame Street, Barney people over there pick right up on that. If you call something what it is, they pick right up on it. But if you call it something that it isn't, they can't figure it out. They can't connect the dots. So what they're going to do is they're going to put the carbon tax on the utility company. The utility company is going to raise the price of your electric rates. And the Barney people, they'll never figure it out. Never be able to connect those dots. So the government's getting their money, but meanwhile, your electricity bill might be $200-$500 a month, and it might be more than you can afford, especially when you're unemployed and hungry. So, you know, you might let the electric bill go, and you might end up without electricity. All right, now I planned for that. I sit there and I said, well, what am I going to do when electricity doubles, triples, quadruples, or God knows? So I put in a little small solar plant here, and my little small solar plant and batteries will run. Oh, let's see what my wife wants. She wanted a washing machine, refrigerator, and a freezer. A washing machine. She said that she did not want to wash clothes on a scrub board. I said, okay, lady, I hear you. She said, I'm addicted to a refrigerator and a freezer, and they're just kind of real neat and handy, and I'd like to have those. Okay, hear you. So I went out to the tower, and I had a guy come in here, and we spent a few bucks. In fact, I'll tell you what it was. It was a $10,000 bill. $10,000. And we put in enough solar panels that we can pump water. Yeah, we got a well with a pump in it, and we can pump water. That's so that we don't have to carry water. We got a 2,500 gallon storage capacity, so that we can, when the sun's shining, we can pump the water out of the well into the 2,500 gallon tanks. So that when the sun isn't shining or when it's stormy and the batteries are all dead, we got water in the tanks to flush the toilet. So again, it goes to your standard of living. Boys and girls, I've also got a couple of outhouses out here, and I can get up and go out to the outhouse. But it is kind of handy to flip on the switch and go into the bathroom, isn't it? You flush the little handle and the nasties go down a pipe. I got to tell you that your standard of living is going to suffer if you're not prepared, and especially going to suffer if you're waiting on rationing and you don't have your national ID card and you don't have your social security number. You don't have your ration card. I mean, you're just going to be SOL. And that's why Revelation 13 says you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without the mark of the beast. Without your ration card, you're not going to be able to buy, sell, or trade. All right. Now, that being the case, then you got to make preparations up front. And so, the 200 things that we had rationed here in the United States during World War II is going to multiply into 2,000 or 3,000 things that come from overseas. So, you take a look at your standard of living in your house, whatever it is that you do, wherever you live. If you're a Mormon and you don't drink coffee, you're in Fat City. You don't need to worry about your coffee interfering with your standard or your lifestyle. But you Mormons might be thinking about stockpiling a little coffee for the pagans down the street, that you might be able to trade the coffee for gasoline or for something else that you might need or desire and don't have. Now, a lot of people, I noticed during Y2K, went out and bought generators. They didn't want to be without electricity. I thought about that. I didn't go out and buy a generator. Now, it happens that I've got 2 or 3 here on the farm. I need them for, you know, if I want to go out in the field and I want to work and I got to have electricity out there, I take a generator out, plug it in, start it up. and I've got power out there, but I'm not planning on running my house on gasoline. Let me give you an illustration. My gasoline now is costing me $4 a gallon. And I think in 1999, when people were buying these generators, and they said, well, if the power goes off because of Y2K, I'm going to have my generator. Well, okay, but were you going to use that generator long term? I mean, you know, like for 4 years? Do you know how much gasoline that thing's going to take to generate all your electric power, you know, over the years? I mean, that's why you are subscribing to PG&E and New York Edison, isn't it? Isn't it because they can deliver electricity cheaper to you than you can make your own? I mean, that was my experience, and that was my experience with my solar panels out here. You know, I can buy power from the power company a lot cheaper than I can make my own. My concern is that there might not be any power available. And if I've got the money today and I go out and I put the solar panels in and it's a 20-year project and they say they'll last for 20 years, then my wife's got water, a washing machine, a refrigerator, and a freezer. That's what she wanted. And my wife is worth $10,000, and so I went out and blew it. Now, I didn't get to go on my princess cruise. Now, I didn't get to go to Disney World. But I got a solar panel set up there, and I got some batteries out there, and I got water. And hey, listen, when this rationing thing comes down, are you going to be real concerned about Princess Cruises and Disneyland? Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. And the Law Hour website is updated every week and has a radio log schedule and archives that can all be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967 and asking for it. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about rationing. The pragmatic, practical, down and dirty, in the trenches solution to the shortage problem that's coming up. All right, so put at the top of your list over here, anything that's imported into the United States is going to be rationed. All right, second item. The government will decide what's going to be imported into the country because we're going to have to cut back to a COD level. So that means that we're going to continue to export that $200 billion a year. That's mainly in soybeans and corn and wheat and things like that. And then we're going to continue to import. But the imports are going to go down from $1 trillion a year to $200 billion a year. And so the government and the Treasury, they'll get busy, just like they're doing right now in Zimbabwe, with what they call monetary controls. So that if you want to buy, let's say, a BMW from Germany, there will be a god-awful tax on that thing. I mean, the BMW will be $40,000, and the tax on it will be $200,000 or something like that. That's to dissuade you from buying anything that's unnecessary from Germany. In fact, they may even get down to where they just ban them, period. Free trade be damned, there's not going to be any BMWs or Rolls Royces coming into the United States. And that's because the scarce hard currencies will have to be used for buying things that are essential. Essential. And so the essential things that come up will be things like medicines and shoes and things like that. And then they're not going to just let you bring in all the shoes that you want. They're going to limit you to, you know, a ration card, like maybe one pair of shoes a year, something like that. And if you wear your shoes out after 9 months, you'll be barefoot for three. Of course, you can always depend upon the black market. The free market will always have shoes available at some price. I mean, they may be two, three, or four, or five times what the official price is. The official price will be the bureaucratic number that's placed on it. So now your standard of living goes down pretty dramatically when you're walking around barefoot for 3 months waiting for your ration card to come back into play. So the logical thing to do then is to have some stuff stockpiled, hoarded, as they say in political circles, hoarded, so that you'll have something to trade for those shoes. I mean, gasoline could be $20 a gallon. So, you know, the 10 gallons of gasoline that I'm going to need to run my chainsaws to cut firewood and run my rototillers to plant my garden and things like that, you know, $20 a gallon is not a bad price to pay, you know, for a few gallons of gas. $20 a gallon trying to fill your motorhome, now it's going to be pricey. So I don't think that many of us are going to be running our motorhome. So, you know, you might think about, hey, it's probably too late now. I already thought about this years ago. I got rid of my motorhomes. I figured that when gasoline hit $6 a gallon, my motorhome, I think it held 60 gallons. 60 times 6 is $360 to fuel it up. And I could burn that up a day. That's $360 a day. I can burn 50 gallons a day in that machine just driving up and down the road. A lot of fun. At 24 cents a gallon, it's not bad, but you know, when it gets up to $6 a gallon, well, all of a sudden, you know, you got to start thinking about the future. Like, what are we going to eat? All right, now, the other day I had a funny thing happen, and I got to relate this to you, because this guy's from New York. Nice guy. Nice guy. He's a subway engineer. He runs those subway trains in New York. Well, anyway, he came to school down here, and he was talking to my wife, and he said, "Now, I've got to have some seeds, and I've got my seeds." And my wife said, "What kind of seeds do you have?" And he said, "I don't know." "Well, where did you buy the seeds?" He said, "I bought it for sprouting." So my wife said, "You mean you've got sprouting seeds?" "Yeah, yeah. So I think I've got my seeds." And she said, "Well, now, did you know that these sprouting seeds, you know, are only going to grow or only going to produce that which they're designed to do?" And he didn't know that. And, you know, for us guys out here on the farm, you know, we thought, what? I mean, this guy is expecting you to get cauliflower out of mung bean seeds? And, well, you know, if you're running a subway train and you've been watching Barney and Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, you probably don't know that cauliflower seeds produce cauliflower. Nothing else. And that alfalfa seeds are great, you know, for sprouts. If you want alfalfa sprouts, then alfalfa seed is the seed that you want for alfalfa sprouts. But you can't get any squash, turnips, or pumpkins with alfalfa seeds. So many of you people probably live in the city and you don't understand that. Well, there's a product called vitamin C. Vitamin C. And I talk to a lot of people that are going to die in the upcoming famine because they don't have vitamin C. They're going to die from scurvy. And this scurvy is a god-awful hard way to go. It's like dying from AIDS. It's just a tough way to die. Scurvy. I mean, you know, if you just took a bullet and shot yourself in the brain, it's a neater, faster, easier way to die than scurvy or Alzheimer's or AIDS. So if you want a hard way to die, vitamin C deficiency is one of them. So I wanted to avoid that, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. So I put in a large supply of sprouting seeds. Sprouting seeds. Now, these sprouting seeds have to be kept cool. I mean, you can't put these up in the attic now where it's 120 or 30 degrees. They have to be sealed in containers that are moisture-proof, like quart jars. Like vacuum-packed quart jars would be a good way to store these. Nor better yet, don't vacuum-pack them, because I've heard that vacuum-packing them over here destroys the germ and kills the seed, and then it won't sprout. You can eat it. You can eat it, but you can't sprout it. Now, these sprouts produce vitamin C. Now, there's a lot of you people that have this the storage food, freeze-dried storage food. Let me pass this one on to you. And because you may not be able to get vitamin C. And that's because your government now is in the mode. They're in the process. They're doing everything they can to take all vitamins and minerals and make them prescription drugs. Now, in a lot of countries, like you people over in Europe, it's already that way. But here in America, it isn't yet. So before that happens, you might want to have a supply of vitamin C. This is organic vitamin C now on the shelf. Or you might want to have sprouting seeds, packed away to eat with your freeze-dried foods. Now, I was watching Bob Chapman. I read his newsletter every week. And Bob Chapman has a guy in there called the freeze-dry guy. And I don't know, maybe this freeze-dry has vitamin C, but it's my understanding that vitamin C does not store well. And that you may need to be producing vitamin C on a daily basis. And the best way to do that is by sprouting seeds and then eating the sprouts. That's where you get your vitamin C. So tuck that one away in your heart as one of your survival skills. And one of the things that may be rationed, like vitamins and minerals. I mean, you know, today you go down and you fill up your tank with gas. It may be pricey, but it's available. The day's coming when you'll go down and you can't get any gas because it isn't there. That's where they're at in Zimbabwe today. You don't need to go down to the gas station because there's no gas there. They've got some hard currency and they're not buying gasoline with the hard currency. They're buying more important things like guns and bullets and nerve gas and things that are essentials, you know, to police state. And you can rest assured that weapons of mass destruction, you know, like cluster bombs, and anti-personnel mines and nuclear weapons are going to be at the top of your government's shopping list, way, way ahead of vitamin C. Way, way ahead of wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Cluster bombs are things that governments cannot live without. Now, you know, you're sitting here saying, well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, excuse me, boys and girls, but when in the hell did government ever make any sense? Huh? Rationing doesn't make any sense either. But, you know, that's the preferred modality for sharing the shortage. All communists need to learn how to share the shortage through rationing. So I'm just passing it on to you. All right. Now, let's take a look here at rationing and scrap drives. Now, back in World War II. During the Depression of the 1930s, Americans did without because they didn't have jobs to buy food and clothes. During World War II, Americans again did without, this time because of the war effort. And rationing affected rural America particularly. And the federal government set up a rationing system in 1942. and limited purchases of sugar, coffee, meat, fish, butter, eggs, cheese, shoes, rubber, and gasoline. Silk and newly invented nylon was used to produce parachutes, and so women around the world found it hard to get fashion stockings. Other commodities were in short supply because trade routes were disrupted. Shellac, for instance, was produced in India and was used for building products and music record discs. And because of the war in Asia, trade with India was disrupted. And so new records, that is 78 RPM records, were hard to come by. So that's right. It was difficult to get records. But hey, listen, we still had music. I mean, we still had the records from 1917 and 1935. But here again, take a look here at nylon stockings. Ladies, would you like to have nylon stockings? Because likely, I mean, there's a good possibility that these nylon stockings, like they were in the last war, might be rationed. They might be hard to come by. So at the risk of being a hoarder, maybe you might think about how many nylon stockings do I need for 1 year? And then maybe it's one pair a month, maybe it's 12 pairs. And then multiply that times 4 years. So maybe you need 50 pairs of nylon stockings. So as not to draw attention to yourself when you walk into the store, you know, like Walmart, and you walk out to the checkout counter and you're checking out with 52 pairs of nylon stockings. Maybe what you do is when you go down to Walmart, you buy 6 pairs of nylon stockings, or 12 pair. And you just do that for 8 or 10 times over the next 90 days. And there would be your supply. And you can stick those up in the attic in their boxes and containers. And then you'll be miles ahead of the average woman who wants to go out, you know, say honky-tonkin', and she has to paint her nylon seam on the back of her leg. I can remember as a kid, they used to do that. When women were going out, they'd take their eyebrow pencil and then they would paint this line up the back of their leg so that it made it look like, you know, in the smoke-filled bar room where you were dancing, ladies, that it made it look like you were wearing nylon stockings when in reality you had this dirty line painted up the back of your leg. Farm production, however, was vital to the war effort, so farmers got extra rations of gasoline and other staples. Yet it was hard to get new machinery as factories were retooled to produce tanks rather than tractors. So we couldn't buy new tractors, but we had plenty of gasoline to burn in the old ones. Hey, here's a thought for you. Have you thought about converting your acreage into a farm? Now, a lot of you people, you know, may be living out here, you know, on some acres. Have you thought about putting in a 300-gallon gas tank? You know, just for thoughtsies. You put in one of these 300-gallon gas tanks, and then you just call the local distributor. He comes out and he fills up your gas tank. You got 300 gallons of gas. I mean, hell, you might even put in 2 or 3 of those, and you might even have 1,000 gallons. Now, it's a little pricey at $4 a gallon, and it'll be pricey at $6 a gallon, but hey, get this. With your farm ration card, or with your farm status, you might be able to buy gasoline. Now, I know right away you're saying, yeah, but Gordon, didn't you just say that you wouldn't have your ration cards and you wouldn't have your national ID card and you wouldn't have your social security card? All right, now listen to this. You ever heard of a front man? A front man. Some of you guys call these straw men. Let me show you how that works. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that you've got a niece. And this niece is a yuppie. And then she's got all of her numbers and all of her ration cards. Everything is all scoped out. She's in great shape. Have you ever thought about using your niece to go down and get this stuff and then store it on your place for your use? Might have to pay her a little something for that. I got a niece and she's pretty handy. And I use my niece as the front person for many of these clandestine things that I have to do with government that I don't want to do. The Amish people do this. See, the Amish guy, he needs firewood for the winter. He doesn't want to cut it with a handsaw, and then he doesn't want to use a chainsaw. So he hires some guy to make his firewood. Hire the guy to do that. And so I've picked right up on that Amish trick, and so I hire people to be my front man in some of these areas, you know, where you have to sign contracts with the government. What the hell? If your niece has already got a contract with the government, what difference does it make if she's got 2, 5, or 9 contracts? Could be an uncle, could be an aunt, could be your brother Louie, you know. Think about that. Here's how rationing worked, though. Each member of the household got a ration booklet, usually distributed at the local school. Each booklet had stamps in it that translated into a certain amount of the commodity being rationed. For instance, there were only enough stamps for one person to buy 28 ounces of meat per week, 4 ounces per day. Merchants collected the stamps when you bought something, and when the stamps were gone, so was the item for that week. So you got 28 ounces of meat a week, which meant that it's 4 ounces a day. Now, you could eat the whole 28 ounces in one sitting if you wanted to. But then for the next 6 days, you got no more meat. So they rationed it out to you. All right, now let's start thinking a little bit here. Have you thought about maybe buying a cow? Just go out here to Dale Smith and say, "Mr. Smith, I'd like to buy a cow. And would you haul that cow over here to this custom butcher?" Now, over in West Plains, there's an outfit over there. They do custom butchering. And I can buy a cow from anybody. I'd prefer to get one that's grass-fed and hasn't been shot up, you know, with snake venom and monkey pus and stilbestrol and antibiotics and all that good stuff, you know, that Americans don't think they can live without. And have that animal butchered and then have it cut up. Now, I wouldn't freeze it, and I'll tell you why. Because we might not have electricity. Might not have electricity. So to preclude that possibility, I'd like to can it. So what I do is I can beef. And if you take a bull, all of us farmers out here, you know, at the end of the year, we have to get rid of our bull and put in a new one, you know, so he's not breeding his daughters, inbreeding, you know, things like that. And so that bull, he's pretty tough. He doesn't make, you know, good steaks, but he does make good hamburger. And I don't like canned hamburger near as much as I like canned cubed beef. So we cut it up into 1-inch cubes. And then we pressure cook it and can it. And so I've got some jars. Now, a 1-quart jar holds 2 pounds of meat. A 1-quart jar holds 2 pounds of meat. Now, meat rationing has always been in vogue in distress times. That's one of the first things they want to ration. So it's one of the first things that you want to put on your shelf. And so you figure out, well, how much meat do we eat? So my wife does this. She'll say to me, "Little Georgie, I want you to go down to the storeroom, and I want you to bring me up a quart of meat." So I bring her up a quart of meat, and there's 2 pounds of meat in there. Now, it's already been cubed. It's called stew meat. So, and she can pour that into the beans. It's already cooked. Hell, you can eat it right out of the jar. Now, if push comes to shove, just open the jar and eat it. It's like eating a pack of jerky, you know. Might not taste as good, but, you know, she can put it in the spaghetti. She puts it in the beans. And sometimes she uses it for a gravy. I mean, there's just all kinds of uses for this canned meat. And it's relatively inexpensive. Relatively inexpensive. In other words, you're buying the whole bull, the whole cow. And you're going to get about 400 pounds. That's about 200 jars of meat. Now, 200 jars of meat is about a year's supply. You know, so about one cow per year, per family. And you've got a year's supply of meat on the shelf, and you can avoid rationing of meat, meat rationing. Another little trick over here is to raise chickens. Now, I realize you live in downtown Cleveland, and it's outlawed, and you can't do that. Have you thought about maybe moving out into the countryside? There are a lot of places for rent, especially farms that have bought out other farms, and there's a there's a house, a beat up old house, and you go to that farmer and you say, I'll rebuild that old house for you if you'll give me 5 years free rent. And you go there and you live there. There's typically a well there. There's this old beat up house, and you're outside of town by 10, 15, 20 miles. Have you ever thought about that? Now you're sitting there saying, well, how would I commute back and forth to work? Plug that one into the equation. Carpooling, mass transit, bus. I mean, there's, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. Where there's a will, there's a way. So that takes you out of downtown Cleveland, where you might get nuked anyway, or you might be suffering from that burn problem, or you might be faced with medical triage. I mean, just getting out of the city can solve several of your strategic problems. Now, the challenge was to use everyone's stamps to buy the food the family needed. The Office of Price Administration gave out points that could be used to purchase goods in very short supply, but it was up to the consumer to use the coupons when buying the rationed items. So a lot of people, you know, vegetarians, they wouldn't be buying meat, would they? But hey, listen, vegetarians, you get 28 ounces a week, so go ahead and take your meat allotment and then trade that to some guy for cigarettes. And maybe you don't smoke, so trade the cigarettes for coffee. And maybe you're a Mormon and don't drink coffee, which you could then trade for something that you do use. You know, like gasoline. So the trading is a very valuable part of the program. Now, Freddie Oglesby left remembers having to have coupons ready before she bought anything. When you bought something, Freddie says, you'd have to have the stamps ready to hand them because that was what our allotment was. Kelly Holthamus remembers that in a town of 600 people, everyone knew how much everyone else was supposed to be getting. So the cheating was hard to get away with. It was all those little things that were so important, he says. The gas rationing, the sugar stamps, the coffee stamps. The ladies couldn't get nylons. And then Winton Wright at the left, he talks about how families adapted to rationing. You're done with what you had, he says. Now, I often wonder if that happens again today, how people would cope with that. Deanna Schmidt remembers how her family worked around the wartime shortages. We just became more ingenious, she says. If we could buy a box of Jell-O, we'd make a pie crust and put Jell-O in it so that we had pie. See how that works? Okay, now if you don't want to have to be ingenious, then you need to have the stuff stockpiled, or you need to be smart enough to trade it to other people for what they've got. All right, now rationing, remember, is stand in line and share the shortage. So we'll take a look next time at how they shared the shortage in wartime Germany. Meanwhile, back on the farm here, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian, non-commercial law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, that's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.